die, Father, is nothing less. Ever since I was a child, I had a feeling that something is missing in me. I want to know why I'm here. Can any of us know that? Become yourself. Then God and the devil don't matter. I want to learn. I want to understand. Be careful. Can you find the force to enable these two quite opposite lines to live together in yourself? At any moment, the wolf can devour the lamb. And you must learn what it means to become responsible. This is an exact knife. And that is why you are here.
Welcome back. This is Henrik, and you're listening to Red Eyes Radio. Today we have a shorter update for you on the 2013 Bilderberg meeting with Daniel Estelin, an investigative journalist who has been researching the Bilderbergers for over 14 years. He's the author of The True Story of the Bilderberg Group and The Octopus Deception that we talked about last time he was on. He also hosts a show on RT. So let's hear what Daniel has to say about this year's conference. Welcome back, Daniel. Good to talk to you again so soon. Thank you for coming on. A lot of things are ongoing, of course. Bilderberg has now started in Watford, England. I think it's called Watford. Tons of folks there this year. Have you seen any of the footage so far, Daniel?
It's great to be on your show, first of all. I have seen quite a bit. There's a lot of media attention, needless to say, this year. We're getting, you know, I think we're getting a lot of friendly overs from the Bilderbergers this year. It's only logical if you really, really think about it. I mean, Alex Jones is there. David Icke is there. Kaiser from the Kaiser Report is there. You know, mainstream press is there from the Associated Press and Reuters, BBC, and, you know, the British mainstream media and American media is there. So it's certainly quite a circus, which is, you know, good on the one hand because it brings Bilderberg a lot more into the mainstream. You know, but as I said, I think, you know, back a month ago when I was on your show for the first time, you know, Bilderberg to a certain point has become, you know, quite irrelevant. It's not a conspiracy theory. You know, a lot of people go off the deep end and make Bilderberg for what it's not. And I think, you know, just one point I'd like to bring out, aside from all the stuff that we know about what Bilderberg is, and no need to go into that, I think that, you know, the dominant narrative of Bilderberg since the beginning, since the 1950s, has been that the organization was very heavily populated by people who came out of the old World War II Nazi apparatus, were basically, you know, cleaned up and dusted off and employed to become the hardcore, you know, troops in a Cold War, anti-Soviet war, you know, against the you know, communists, people such as Prince Bernard of the Netherlands, and also one of the key architects of Europe, Walter Hallstein, you know, one of the key Nazi lawyers at the time, and you know, so, you know, that's the background, you know, to Bilderberg, and today, obviously, nobody talks about that.
Yeah.
Bilderberg has just become, you know, some kind of a Woodstock from, you know, I think 2013, you know.
Right.
Did you go to Woodstock? I did. Did you go to the Bilderberg conference? You know, you see, like, posters of people saying, you know, to hell with Bilderberg, and people, you know, having the T-shirts, Bilderberg conference 2013. You know, the good old days where,
right,
Jim Tucker and I, you know, God bless his soul, and I'm sure he's, you know, up there somewhere watching and having a good time, you know, of the two of us, you know, going and having to deal with, you know, with the police harassment and persecution, just the two of us against all of these, you know, bad guys. I think they're all, you know, all gone and over with. And since my book came out for the first time in 2005, you know, people have realized that, hey, let's go out there and party. And there we are, 2013, Watford, you know, the world capital for conspiracy watchers,
yeah,
including the mainstream press.
Well, this is what's so funny about it, because still a lot of mainstream media outlets are actually talking about it like it's not really happening. I mean, the BBC debacle, where some of the journalists are still on some level denying it, why other outlets such as The Guardian with Charlie Skeleton and everything else are obviously reporting on this flat out now. So there seems to be kind of not a consensus within the mainstream media of how to deal with this so far.
Well, you know, I think, you know, consensus is really not important. I think, you know, if people, you know, kind of think about it for a little while, they understand that, you know, the way that the media tells us is not really how the world works. And,
sure.
You know, if you look at nation states, be it Spain or be it Greece or whatever, I mean, you have a guy in Spain elected by the people, you know, the president of the country, Rajoy, and over 10 million people voted for him. You know, and then, you know, when you try to explain it to the mainstream media in Spain that he's nothing, he's a nobody, he's just a bum boy for the powerful elite, people get upset with you. But the fact is that you have, you know, the famous Troika coming from Brussels, unelected by anyone, you know, to Spain, and so when they come to Spain, they tell the president of a country elected by somebody what they have to do with the economy, how they have to reorganize the country, and the guy who runs the country, you know, nominally the president, so to speak, you know, he does exactly as he's told or else. You know, that's how the world really works, and the fact that you have the Bilderbergers, you know, who are meeting in England this year, meeting wherever they're going to be meeting next year, you know, do all these things. You know, people have to understand, again, Bilderberg is important to a point. You know, they're not the top of the pyramid. They're not the organization that runs the world. You know, Bilderbergers and the Trilateral Commission, the Council of Foreign Relations, they have operational missions. You know what I mean? They're not the seats of power. The organizations, you know, that they don't decide, you know, major policy decisions. They don't decide issues of war and peace. They don't decide questions of genocide. You know, once these, you know, issues are decided on, then the Bilderbergers and Trilateral Commissions and the Council of Foreign Relations and the Pinay Circles and so on and so forth, they take this on an operational level and pass it to, you know, to all the organizations whose members are members of the Bilderberg Organization. That's why you have President of the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, European Central Bank, Federal Reserve, you know, the biggest banks in the world. They're all there at the Bilderberg Conference because the policy decisions made at a much higher levels, they iron out exactly how, on a, you know, technical, you know, terms, they're going to be run through the world media and run through, you know, the mainstream press and the political committees and so on and so forth. But again, people who, you know, think that Bilderberg is the top of the pyramid, they're not. It's a great story, you know, and you know, it's been a fun ride ever since my book came out in 2005. But again, you know, the fact that, you know, they have a web page and have a press office right now.
Yeah. You know? There were talks that they were going to do a press conference potentially, even like engage a little bit more in the, you know, in the media that actually is there. Do you think that is going to happen to any extent so far?
You know, it might, but, you know, it's bread and circus for the great unwashed. I mean, to think, you know, like, you know, look at the Davos meeting. I mean, Davos is a great example of how things run. You know, you have a public face, which is, you know, the media, there are all these people with their credentials, and the presidents and prime ministers come in and talk in an open forum with activists from all over the world, and the share stage and concerns. But the real Davos, you know, where real decisions are made, is done behind the scenes, away from the public light, where nobody sees and knows what's going on. That's how things really run.
Yeah.
And they've always run this way, you know, because,
right,
again, these organizations, Bilderbergers and so on, they represent a certain ideology. It's a medium, basically, of bringing together financial institutions, which are the world's most powerful and most predatory financial interests, you know, publicly speaking. And it's that combination, you know, which is the worst enemy of humanity. Not Bilderberg that's the worst enemy of humanity. I mean, that's insane. You know, talking about banal conspiracy theories, you know. But it's definitely, you know, the issues that they discuss of great importance. And one of the issues, for example, from this year's conference is how to avoid another, you know, the financial bubble. But again, the point of avoiding a bubble is not, again, the people who think that, oh, they're there, you know, to see how, you know, how they can fix the world. Well, they're not. You know, Bilderberg is, you know, it's, you know, I did an interview, you know, with these, you know, the people, Philly people from, you know, the national Spanish, you know, public radio, and, you know, she said, you know, in closing comments, she said, well, you know, hopefully, you know, this brain trust from, you know, people who have, you know, so much knowledge maybe they can get together and, you know, help us fix the world. I said to her, they're not there to fix the world. They're there representing 0.1% of the population, and you and I, the great unwashed, we are their enemies. And if they're there, is to make sure that the destruction of the world economy is going to be done in an orderly fashion. You know, that's what people don't seem to understand. But again, there's some very interesting discussions, and you know, we have sources, as you know, which is one of the reasons I've been so much on the money with so many things over the years. You know, my success rate is about 98%. So we always know what these people talk about. And this year's subject, you know, they talked about for example, again, if you look at, you know, the official press release of Bilderberger subject matters, and really what they talked about, you know, they coincide in some, but obviously there are other issues which have nothing to do with what the media have been given. You know, how to avoid another financial meltdown, that's been one of them. You know, what's going to happen, you know, if Britain avoids, you know, gets out of Europe, that's always, you know, that's been discussed openly in the mainstream press. Mm-hmm. Another issue of this year's conference was the, you know, nuclear Iran, and I just got, you know, first-hand information, which we're going to talk exclusively, actually, because I literally, you know, it got to me about 5 minutes ago. So I was looking at it as, you know, I was waiting for your phone call.
Mm-hmm.
You know, another thing, a subject matter is, you know, the BRICS, Brazil, you know, Russia, India, and China. They're talking about the new motors, emerging motors, you know, for world growth. But again, when they're talking about BRICS, they're not talking about BRICS, you know, in a way that these nations work together to, you know, to save the world from the financial meltdown. On the opposite, they're trying to create another bloc to actually, you know, to confront, you know, the BRICS and destroy their, you know, their power as, you know, as an alternative, you know, to what the elite are trying to do. Another thing that they're talking about is how to reorganize the world's financial system. China is another obvious subject of conversation. And then they're talking about, you know, the social model of you know, social welfare. Needless to say, they're not trying to help the world and all the people who are, you know, dying of hunger, but how do I, you know, squeeze the life of what little life these people actually have in them.
Yeah, that's right.
And subject number 8 on the matter is very interesting on their agenda was, and that's something that they're discussing actually today, is, you know, the security of world food production. Again, you know, people who, you know, who think that the Bilderbergers, the Henry Kissingers and Rockefellers and, you know, and the people from the World Bank and International Monetary Fund are there, you know, to, you know, thinking of how to save 7 billion people from starvation. No, wrong. It's the opposite.
How do we control the food, you know, supply? What do we do?
How do we control the food?
Yeah. How do we do to
exactly
spread hunger across the globe? Yeah, we got it.
Exactly. And, you know, and the final subject is, you know, I think we've talked about it before, the, you know, change in paradigm of society, the technologies of the future, because that's the control. And, you know, and I try to explain to people that the technology we have today in, you know, in our smartphones is more technology than any of those, you know, shuttles that actually went to the moon back in the 1960s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's how powerful technology is today. And it's very interesting that the Googles and the Apples and the Microsofts, you know, the Yahoos, they're there, all of them together, because, you know, people who think that Google is a nice, you know, fuzzy little company don't understand that the word Google, G-O-O-G-O-L, that's how Google is spelled, is an infinite number, 1 to the power of 100.
Yeah.
And infinity, okay, means control. Okay, it's directly proportional to control. And Google, okay, and Apple and Microsoft, they're not corporations that compete against each other. All of them form part of, you know, of this diaspora of control, part of, you know, the American security apparatus. And obviously, they compete against each other for the control of the markets. That's logical. But they work together, you know, with the American government for controlling the world. So anyway, these are some of the discussion points, and again, it's funny watching, you know, it's, you know, and that's what I thought, the first thing I thought of when I saw the pictures from, you know, this year's Bilderberg conference. You have these people in, you know, in t-shirts and shorts and, you know, and flippers and, you know, beach towels and, you know, these signs and
right,
people selling t-shirts.
Mm.
The first thing I thought of was Woodstock.
Sure.
You know, back like 50 years from now, you know, people who are going to be in, like, their 70s, you know, old geezers, you know, bald and fat and, You're not going to be saying to the children and grandchildren, hey, man, I was at, you know, a Bilderberg 2013.
Well, it's like kind of set up like a stage a little bit, like a game in a sense that they're also using this to kind of maybe vent some of this anger and maybe it's even beneficial. I mean, we know that it's there's ongoing policy being made at these meetings, but, you know, at the same time, I think that at this stage, Daniel, they're using this, you know, very event for an example to kind of vent a little bit. It's like the publicly, suppressed kind of meeting, but everybody knows about it. But still, if we keep it on this level, then the majority of the attention and focus is still going to be riled up around Bilderberg.
Oh, exactly. And, you know, and people are saying, hey, it's a victory, you know, for us. You know, we finally, you know, got Bilderberg to admit. I mean, Bilderberg is now been a secret society. You know, it's been a private organization, and you know, if there's a secret society, it was a secret society, it was Skull and Bones, which nobody knew anything about until, you know, in the 1970s, you know, from 1832 when it was founded in the United States. I mean, that's a secret society,
yep.
You know? And if you think of some of the, you know, some of the areas of discussion, you know, that they're talking about this year and they talked about last year, and if you look, for example, you know, and how to avoid another bubble, again, that's something that they've already discussed. We have the information from our sources, what they said, and, you know, people have to understand that, you know, anything that has to do with bailouts, anything that has to do with money flowing into the system, it's a giant trap. And although they're telling you, you know, they're trying to save the economy, what they're doing is, they did it back then, you know, in the 2008, 2009, and they're doing it now, and we're seeing it in Spain and in Greece, and, you know, Greece needs another, you know, bailout. What they're doing is the bankers are transferring huge amounts of debt from the private hands, from the banks and other, you know, powerful financial interests to the books of government.
Yeah,
but because
right.
The economy is, you know, continuing to tank.
Yeah.
Okay, it tanked in 2008 and it's tanking today. You know, this debt is absolutely unpayable. There's no way you can, you know, save the economy. And what they're doing in the effect of the bailout is they're bankrupting the government. And that's the real purpose of the bailout, to finish the destruction of the government under the control of this, you know, group called InterAlpha, which is, you know, the leading banks in the world, controlled by the British Empire, and that controls about 70% of the money flows that came out of the Bretton Woods, you know, system when Bretton Woods was destroyed back in the early 1970s.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's the whole thing of what they're doing right now. And that's the whole thing of the bailout. And you're watching nations of the world, you know, one after another being destroyed and being replaced by fascist dictatorships, by international global fascist or imperial cabal. And again, which is why, you know, what I said, Bilderberg was initially,
yeah.
Going back to the fascist apparatus, you know, it's still the same apparatus that just made it public and made it popular, you know, but the, you know, the whole thing hasn't changed. And if we're talking about that, you know, back in 2008, you know, the 16 trillion bailout by the Fed, you know, but a lot of that money went to the European banks. It had nothing to do with saving the United States. They lied about the real intent. What they were trying to do is to save the British Empire system or the imperial system. They weren't trying to save the U.S. banks, or they wouldn't have given all this money to foreign banks. They wanted to save the system, which is, in a way, is what you have to do if you have this global system full of derivatives. So if it blows up in one place, it blows up everywhere else.
Yeah.
So you have to protect the weakest banks. It's like you're putting out the fires. So if you put out, you know, the fire wherever it breaks out, otherwise the whole place, you know, can burn down. And that's what they're talking about at the meeting. So they're not talking about, you know, how to avoid another bubble. They're, you know, they're talking about, you know, how to make sure they control, you know, all those blowouts while they're still destroying the system, you know, voluntarily.
Well,
I
just wanted to interject there. I mean, officially, if you look at some of the people who have been talking with media who are insiders or, you know, attending the meeting or past people who have been attending, like even Lord Carrickton, I was reading this article today from The Telegraph, they're constantly saying that they appreciate the meeting for the fact that they can finally talk openly about what they really think. And it's just amazing that they say that in the paper because as, politicians and representatives of, you know, the people, quote unquote, This is the ideology of what they have, because if people really knew what they were thinking about and what they were wanted to, the policies that they wanted to, you know, interject here, then people would be angry with it. They would be upset with it. So here's a chance for them to
talk. You know, the thing is that all of the meetings are secret. It doesn't matter if you're talking about Davos, you're talking about G8, you're talking about G20, you're talking about Bilderberg, you're talking about Trilateral Commission, Council for Relations, Bohemian Grove, you know, the Panay Circle. all of these meetings, you know, they're all secret.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, International Monetary Fund, World Bank, you know, meetings and committee meetings and, you know, group meetings and division meetings. And, you know, it's, you know, people think that deliberately is like, all of these people meet all the time.
Yeah.
And it's normal, you know, you have powerful people, you know, who can meet in secret or private or can go to somebody's house, you know, and sit at David Rockefeller's estate, which is like 70 acres in the state of New York, and they can talk about anything they want and nobody knows what they're talking about.
Yeah,
and the thing is that it's done all the time. So people who say that, you know, they only can do this at Dilip, but it's a bunch of nonsense.
Yeah, yeah.
Lord Carrington has been doing this all the time, and you can meet with the Queen and sit, you know, in front of her on her lap or wherever he sits under her feet, you know,
yeah.
You know, while you're, you know, kissing a, you know, little old ugly toe. He, you know, all this stuff is done all the time. So people, you know, say that, oh, no, they're talking in secret and in private at Dilip. Like, it's nonsense. Davos is secret, and the public face has nothing to do with reality of Davos. You know, Trilateral Commission meetings are secret. Council of Foreign Relations meetings are secret. World Bank meetings are secret. G8 meetings are secret. You have the press, but the press doesn't know anything that they don't want you to tell. They don't want you to know.
Well, they have
and
press
the
releases, right?
Never,
these meetings, you know, as Davos, for example, there they have that, okay, now it's time for the interaction with the press, and then they tell them, you know, they have the script.
Exactly, but the real stuff is not discussed in public.
No, of course not, of course not.
You know,
yeah.
So again, but what they're trying to do is, you know, they're trying to save the system. Well, you know, we're seeing this in Spain, we're seeing it in other countries, that this debt is simply unpayable. And no matter how you look at it, what they're trying to do is trying to save this money, okay, the system is not coming back, and it's, and you know, but this is virtual money, it doesn't exist, okay?
Yeah.
The debt can never pay, which is one of the things I talk about in the Octopus Conspiracy. You know, $223 trillion, it's virtual money. Okay? And you know, it can only pay that the derivatives, they have no value, it's all sham. It's like monopoly money. But in trying to save that, we're going to destroy ourselves, destroying the nations, and that's what this whole thing really represents. And that's why, you know, you see them buying, you know, buying it, because most of these banks that are buying this, they'll be thrown away anyway, you know, fed to the sharks, but the nations are going to go first. And once the nations are gone, and then the empire can reorganize itself however it wants, and it set up a new monetary system, which is exactly what is being done. You know what I mean? And, you know, another thing, and I know we don't have a lot of time, but another thing is, you know, all the stuff that they're talking about the in Iran, which is very important. And again, you know, you'll be the first one on the show to actually hear about this, because I literally just got my information 5 minutes ago or half an hour ago.
What is some that you have here?
Well, you know, again, you know, the Iran issue, you know, they're talking about, you know, the Iran nuclear program. But what they're really talking about is, you know, they need to control the people who are going to be running in the Iranian presidential elections next week. Because, you know, again, after Syria comes Iran, after Iran comes Russia. Okay, it's not like Iran, you know, is an end game. Iran is just a nation. Okay, but there's an end game in this whole game. And the end game is until you can control Russia and China. Okay, you don't control the world, and Russia is a military power. Okay,
yeah.
And China is an economic power. China is not a military power. China has a lot of people, but it's not a. It doesn't have the technology that Russia has.
Yeah.
So until you can control Russia, until you get back to the, you know, good old 1990s when, you know, you had third-rate, you know, nobody's, you know, assistant of an assistant of an assistant, bum boy, you know, the toe cleaner, you know, with this, you know, coming to Russia and lecturing the president of the nation,
yeah.
What he has to do and has to, you know, reorganize. Who are these people? They're nobody, you know. So one of the things, again, they talked about at the Bilderberg Conference yesterday about the whole thing in Iran. Next week you have presidential elections, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the presidential elections in Iran will serve as a national referendum on the country's nuclear diplomacy, okay? And that's one of the things that they talked about, because you have 8 candidates, certified candidates on the ballot, and amongst them you have former and present nuclear negotiators, okay, who are offering different alternatives.
Yeah.
On the one hand, and this is the hand that the Bilderbergers are squarely behind, is a guy by the name of Hassan Rouhani. Okay, he's a British-educated cleric, okay, who led the Iranian nuclear negotiation team from 2003 to 2005, okay, and the Bilderbergers call him nuclear pragmatist, okay, which is just another way of saying, you know, let's get this British stooge, you know, on our side. Okay, so you have this guy who is going to be squarely, if you watch the mainstream media, They're going to be talking wonders about this guy, Hassan Rouhani. His name is spelled R-O-W-H-A-N-A. And please forgive me if I, you know, mispronounced his name. You know, some of the sounds, you know, with my Russian paladar, you know, don't work very well. We're afraid to hurt my mouth.
Right.
You know, then you have another guy. Okay, and this is a guy that Bilderberg is going to be squarely against. His name is Saeed Jalili, J-A-L-I-L-I. Now, this is the guy who is the current head of Iranian's nuclear negotiation team, and he's considered to be a front runner by the elements of the Iranian media, and the Bilderbergers also see him as, you know, the main enemy, you know, quote unquote, or difficulty, you know, towards a more malleable Iran. So he is considered a, you know, a hardline negotiator, and his position is hardline stance to the West's position of dismantling Iran's nuclear program.
Mm.
So there's a great deal of concern from Bilderberg about what's going to happen in next week's election. And also, Bilderberg is very aware that there's a lot of concern in Iran about pending U.S. legislation on Iran that focuses on, you know, depriving Iran of access to its oil proceeds, for example. Okay? You know, basically they're talking about economy without oil dependency. That's another phrase you're going to see a lot in the mainstream press very shortly. So you're talking about, you know, Bilderberg also talked, as far as Iran is concerned, you know, the looming budgetary crisis of the state, okay, you know, which is going to, how it's going to transpire, you know, through very hostile, you know, Western, you know, punishing Western sanctions.
Yeah.
And what Bilderberg basically agrees on is that no matter who wins, Iran's enrichment program will continue, and no matter what you do with the sanctions, you know, it's still going to go on. And there lies the riddle of nuclear crisis, okay, for Bilderberg and for the world. You know, and a few policy experts in Iran hope that there's going to be a change, you know, shift by the United States government in light of Obama's record of, you know, towing Israel's prescription for crippling sanctions on Iran. You know, so again, there's a lot of, you know, uncertainty. You know, they're talking about, again, quoting literally from Bilderberger meeting, you know, the uncertainty horizon, the riddle of the nuclear crisis. You know, what's going to happen, you know, short term with all the stuff. The Bilderbergers are supporting one candidate, or at least that's the consensus from the meeting.
Yeah.
Because, again, as far as Bilderberg concerned, nobody tells, you know, any of the members what to do. But they reach a consensus because, what the, you know, you have 120, 130 delegates who break up in groups of 20, and they prepare the reports, you know, before the meeting on issues which they will be discussing at the meeting, and then after each report, you know, there's a group debate on the policy. And what they do is that once they debate it in small groups, then they get together and debate it together once they actually can iron out, you know, two or three alternatives. And then they come up with a, you know, common policy of what to do and how to approach it, you know, internationally. That's why, you know, the media is going to all be towing a certain line. You know, the politicians, you know, the economists, you know, the financiers, they're all going to be working together towards a particular goal. But you have two candidates out of the eight. One is, you know, the consensus candidate for the Bilderbergers, and the other one is a hardline candidate for the Iranians. You know, obviously, Bilderberg doesn't want Iran to continue with their nuclear program.
Yeah.
Not because it's a nuclear program, you know, that's a danger in the world, because, you know, Iran does not pose any danger to the world. If there is one nation that poses danger, you know, to the world, that's Israel. It's not even the United States.
Yeah.
It's Israel, you know. And if, you know, if you can, you know, if you can get rid of, you know, Israel of its nuclear program, you take their, if, you know, if you can disarm a goon, they become worthless, useless, and powerless, because that's what they are. They're just a goon. And that's, you know, same thing we said, you know, people like, you know, Bush. You take away his arms, they're just nothing. You take, you know, Israel's, you know, guns and arms, they're nothing. So, and that's, you know, so Iran is not an enemy. Iran is the enemy of Bilderberg and the elite, because they want to have their own nuclear program, not because they want to bomb someone into oblivion. I think it's obvious.
Mm.
But because any nation in the world, you know, has the right, okay, to make sure that their nation is better off today than it was yesterday. Okay, and nuclear technology, nuclear power is, you know, infinitely better than oil, than, you know, coal. And after nuclear, you have, you know, fusion. You need that for the nation to improve the possibilities of the country, you know, to improve the economy per square meter of space against nature. And needless to say, the Israelis and the Americans don't want Iran to develop.
Yeah.
Because progress and development is directly proportional to population density, to the wealth of a nation, to their development technologically. If you want to conquer states and enslave them, you know, you don't want, you know, people have nuclear power. That's why they're trying to destroy Iran.
Yeah, yeah. Let me ask you this. We're shortly running out of time here. A couple more questions. Are there any good insiders within Bilderberg as far as you know? I mean, Alex Jones talked about being in communication with some folks on the inside, including, I think, former PayPal founder Peter Thiel, who is on the steering committee of the Bilderberg Group. But there have been claims that he's more, well, what you would say, more anti-New World Order, allegedly. I don't know if that, you know, helps in any regard to sort anything out on that note. But what do you know about that, Daniel?
Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, I can't get into Alex's head. I don't know what's in there.
No,
you
sure.
Know, but I can tell
I
you that, you know,
someone like Peter Thiel, if there's people on the inside who actually have...
I don't think so. I mean, it's like the people who form part of... First of all, if that was the case, okay, then he would no longer be, you know, part of Bilderberg, and they would have, you know, taken them out of the equation, and PayPal would have disappeared, you know, and then replaced by another company.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, you know, anyone who's there, you know, is there because, you know, they've made it. You could say it's like, you know, I've made it. You know, you've gotten to a point where you admit it to a group of people of certain power in the world stage.
Yeah.
But once you made it, you don't want to give up that position. Because, you know, there's always somebody else who's trying to get to your position, you know, and they can get rid of you, you know, they'll take over your seat. You know what I mean? So I have a difficulty believing that anybody who's there, you know, will openly come out and give the names and, you know, saying that, you know, they're against one. It's nonsense. I don't think so.
They'll be kicked out right away.
Exactly. You know what I mean? I have people, you know, for years who've been members and some of them still are. You know, who don't come on an annual basis, but who come once in a while to these conferences, and all the attendees, even past attendees who are not invited anymore, they get, you know, not a full Bilderberg report, but they get, you know, a summarized, you know, a shorter version, 10, 12 page Bilderberg report that explains what everybody talks about. You know, this way you keep, you know, the networking going and you keep all these people, you know, in there. And the threat is obviously if you talk, you're going to be excluded from this. You're not talking to be killed. You don't need to do that anymore. You know what I mean? So and that's one of the reasons my prediction rates have been so good over the years. You know, going back, you know, in 2005, I talked about oil prices going to $100 a barrel, and, you know, when it was like 30, I think, and you know, that came through, and I said that the gold is going to go into 1,000 when it was 300 in 2005. That happened. You know, I predicted, you know, several years in advance the housing meltdown in 2007. It just happened like on the money, literally. You know, and so, you know, I can tell you that I have people there who've, you know, been members, which is one of the reasons I don't bother going to the Liberal Conference anymore, because, you know, I was never a big fan of Woodstock to begin with, okay? I always thought of, you know, hippies as, you know, dirty, filthy, and immoral.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and Bilderberg has become more of a hippie movement than anything else. Or, you know, so, but, you know, certainly the information, you know, comes to me as it always has in the past. And we always get, you know, key information and good information out into the open. And this thing in Iran is obviously, you know, is just, you know, hot on the presses. But, you know, I think there are people who come to these meetings who might not agree, you know, in full to some of the things that are going on. And also, a lot of the people who are invited, you know, they don't understand that there's an organized formal structure to these meetings. I think they do now because, you know, because of my book and because of all the press, you know, they can actually go in and find information and say, hey, you know, there's a structure to it. But in the past, people would go to these meetings, and who wouldn't want to, if you're a university professor, if you're some guy, you know, who's studying some kind of a chromosome, you know, and that has nothing to do with, you know, with world finances,
right,
and you're invited to this meeting to share this information because that information is useful for Monsanto's control, the world food supply.
Yeah.
Hey, wouldn't you want to go and meet Rockefeller and David and Kissinger and all these people, as Zbigniew Brzezinski, you know, and the president of, you know, of you know, whatever country in the world, of France, and you know, and the Wallenbergs from Sweden and the Carl Bildt, and sit with them at the same table and, you know, share your experiences and, you know, be part of this networking? Well, I would. I mean, you would. Anybody would. Why not? But the fact is that you understand there's a structure behind it, and these people have, you know, long-range plans, have very little to do with your expertise in a particular area of chromosomes. You know what I mean? That's a difference. That's a game changer. You know what I mean? And in the past, a lot of these people didn't know that there was a structure. And that's why they came, you know, happily and readily and were willing to share all this information. But I think now it's different.
Yeah, it's a little bit different. All right, well, that's a quick update on the 2013 meeting, of course, as circus as usual. We'll have to let you go for now, Daniel. I know you're a busy guy, but give us your website and mention your book titles again for more on the backstory on the Bilderbergs, of course.
Yeah, it's danielestulin.com. I have a new book, The Octopus Deception, which is a novel, but it's based mostly on 14, 15 years of investigative journalism. It's kind of a mix between John Le Carré and Robert Ludlum. And I don't know if you had a chance to finish it, but
I've been enjoying it very much, Daniel. I've been enjoying it. I've been really busy, but I've been reading it more, and it's a great book, so well written.
Excellent. Well, listen, maybe we can touch base soon, and I can tell you what else Bilderberg talked about.
Yeah, we should do that. Thanks for the update, Daniel. Really appreciate it. Have a good rest of your day. Okay,
bye-bye.
Bye. All right, folks, thank you for listening. We'll be back next with Stephen Greer talking about the controversial Sirius film. Also a one-hour segment while we're still out on the road. And after this, we'll be back in normal capacity with Maurice Cottrell. Much more coming after this. RedIceCreations.com and RedIceMembers.com is our websites where we have much more for you. I hope you enjoy the rest of your day, and we'll speak to you soon. Have a good one. Take it easy.